So, greetings, friends, and welcome to my Wednesday Dhamma talk. Excuse me. I should have cleared my voice before I started. Today's talk is on an article. It's actually the featured article on my website, crossrivermeditation.com, and it's called The Buddha Taught Happiness, and the title relates to somewhat of a common misconception. That the Buddha's teachings are very negative or pessimistic or even nihilistic, when in fact the Buddha simply identified the problem of suffering and made that his central theme in all of his teachings, to point to the fact that it's entirely possible to develop lasting peace and happiness in this human life. And without a long and laborious process. And what I mean by that is he also taught a very specific path to developing that lasting peace and happiness. And so I'm going to read a little bit from this article and then just comment on it. When the Buddha described his awakening, he described it in exactly this way, and he did this many, many times. The Buddha's words on what it meant to awaken to him, and he's also describing how and what we can expect when we actually develop the Eightfold Path, the Buddha's words. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regards to things never heard before. And that's an important line right there. Much of the later developed Buddhist schools say that the Buddha almost magically came to understand something that was already present and had been taught going back for endless millennia. And of course, the Buddha's own words, say that this is something that has never been understood or certainly never presented before. I'll read that again. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regards to things never heard before. And then he describes exactly what that is. This is the noble truth of the way of practicing, leading to the cessation of stress. This noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress is to be developed. This noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress has been developed. And that's from the Samyutta Nikaya 56.11, which is the Buddha's teachings. It's called the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which is the sutta where the Buddha, for the very first time, shortly after his awakening, about 2 weeks later, presented the Four Noble Truths to the five friends he had made previously. And all of them together spent many years trying to develop understanding. And the Buddha did eventually, and he presented this teaching. And that's what he's referring to. The Four Noble Truths start with the acknowledgement that suffering occurs. It's often stated as there is suffering. I think maybe a better way, certainly for modern times, is simply to say that dukkha occurs in life. The Second Noble Truth is that craving originates and clinging perpetuates that suffering, which he says in this quote. And then the Third Noble Truth says that it's possible to bring this process to cessation. And the Final Noble Truth is the truth of the path, the Eightfold Path, that leads to the development of the cessation of suffering. And of course, once our own individual contributions to suffering have ceased, we live lives of lasting peace and happiness, a mind free and calm, free of distractions, and calm no matter what is occurring. So this is the only path that the Buddha ever taught. And he taught it precisely for one reason. And that one reason is to overcome, I don't know if you can hear my dog drinking a big bowl of water. Excuse me for that. He taught that for one reason, which was to overcome what he knew as a common human problem of conditioned thinking. Another word for conditioned thinking is confirmation bias, which simply means that we acquire views that bias us towards seeing things in a realistic way and only in a way that confirms the current view that we have. So upon the Buddha's awakening, he he sat for another 2 weeks or so in meditation off and on. And what he was trying to develop through a calm and peaceful mind was, is there a way to present what he now understood as a truth of human reality in a way that other humans could find it useful, and actually could he present it in a way that would penetrate that problem of conditioned thinking? And that's when he developed the Eightfold Path, specifically, and I can say, I could say solely, because that's what I believe, to overcome that common human problem of conditioned mind. And what that leads to is something I've been talking about. I talk about often. It's in my articles and my videos and talks. It's also kind of the central theme of a recent article that I just posted this week called Modern Buddhism, A Thicket of Views. That article is on the website. It's also there's also a video of that from my class last night. But the problem of conditioned thinking is, if it's not initially addressed and actually made the central theme of a Buddhist practice, the development of what the Buddha described just in that in what I just quoted from him is not likely to occur, precisely because of conditioned thinking. So unless the Eightfold Path is used as the framework for our Dhamma practice and ultimately as a framework for our lives, it's not likely that we're going to be able to overcome conditioned thinking and develop that life of lasting peace and happiness that the Buddha described. It wasn't until he put aside... Let me backtrack just a little bit. When you read the account of the Buddha's final meditation period, which is said to last approximately 40 days. And again, the time frame isn't all that important. If it was a simple overnight sit, it really doesn't matter, because what matters most is that the Buddha developed awakening, and he developed awakening precisely by recognizing. Again, if you read the account, and perhaps I'll put an article in just a single article on that, on the Buddha's awakening. If you read that account, the aspects of the Buddha's conditioned thinking that he faced during that last meditation session prior to his awakening are these conditioned views that kept coming up in his mind. And at that final stage of his understanding, he was able to recognize that these were, in fact, conditioned aspects of his mind. Another way of saying that is assumptions or fabrications or simply mind states that were rooted in conditioned thinking, that he was able to recognize because of his prior development, but most importantly, because of the concentration he was able to develop in his meditation practice, to actually have the spaciousness in his thoughts at this time to recognize. Now, these aspects of conditioned thinking, these mind states, are portrayed in the Pali Canon, and specifically in this aspect of it, as different mind states, often given to saying that they originate in other gods. In this case, it was the malevolent god Mara. Of course, and there's an article on the website too about the use of metaphor in the Pali Canon. It's called Mara and Metaphor in the Pali Canon, if you want to look that up. But metaphor was often used in the Pali Canon and during the Buddha's teachings because it was a common practice at that time. There was a lot of metaphorical language in different spiritual texts at the time, particularly the Vedas, which the Buddha studied and rejected as not leading to his goal. So he was simply using a common way of communicating that has carried through to today. The use of metaphor is certainly very helpful in describing those disturbed mind states that the Buddha still had until his awakening. So during this last meditation prior to his awakening, he recognized every aspect of conditioned thinking as they came up in his mind. He recognized each and every one of them as impermanent, but most importantly, or at least as importantly, he recognized the confused and deluded thinking that led to the establishment of what up until that point he felt was a permanent individual self. And he recognized the impermanence in the objects, events, and ideas that he was attached to, but also the impermanence of the self itself, what he later would describe as anatta, another misunderstood phrase that the Buddha used not to say that there's no such thing as a self, but simply to state that it's the views that we hold of a self do not constitute a self. Let go of the views. And there's so many suttas throughout the Pali Canon where just that theme comes up. Probably the most famous and one that I refer to often is the wanderer Vachagoda, who would come in and out of the Buddha's life asking very mystical and esoteric questions that ultimately seek to establish an ongoing permanent self. And the Buddha's answer was typically either to remain silent to show Vachagoda that his questions themselves didn't even deserve an answer because they were so rooted in foolishness. But when he would answer, he would say, Vachagoda, your questions themselves are causing your confusion. Let go of the questions. And in that last line, let go of the questions, he's also instructing Vachagoda to let go of his conditioned thinking that gives rise to these questions in the first place. So to get back a little bit to the article, there have been many adaptations and accommodations made to the Buddha's original teachings to allow for something other than simply creating what the Buddha stated as vision arose in things never heard before relating directly to the Four Noble Truths. So what unfortunately has developed is the Four Noble Truths, including the Eightfold Path, have been greatly diminished in importance in many teachings and often simply dismissed outright in favor of later developed teachings and practices that are also themselves based on later developed sutras that the Buddha never gave, or they're presented in a way that the Buddha gave these teachings while in a disincarnate form. And again, there's all types of legends and reasons behind that. None of them are based in reality, of course. Even when the Buddha passed, when he was coming up, knowing that he was about to die, this is in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, which is a sutta that encompasses about the last 90 days of the Buddha's life. Ananda, the Buddha's cousin and second for the last 25 years of his life, his assistant, he knew that the Buddha was very ill and he was likely to pass. And Ananda pleaded with his cousin, the Buddha, saying, give us one more final teaching. Let us know what's most important. And the Buddha said, I'm not like a teacher with a closed fist. I've held nothing back. I've given and taught you everything you need to know. And then his final words on this earth were, impermanence and decay are relentless. Strive diligently for your own awakening. And those words are so important. The Buddha left nothing back. Held nothing back. He taught everything we need to know to develop awakening for ourselves. The issue then is what practice are we going to develop? Are we going to develop what the Buddha taught in the context of what he taught, meaning in the context of the Four Noble Truths, was in the framework of the Eightfold Path, or will we substitute something else almost without question has a different goal? And I'm not saying that every later developed school does not address the notion of suffering, but I've yet to come across one that directly addresses it in the way that the Buddha presented and doesn't add on other practices and even different techniques that I found are merely a distraction from actually developing and completing the Eightfold Path and developing a life of lasting peace and happiness. So the Buddha taught a path to directly leading to peace and happiness. One way, if you're confused about your own practice, there's an article on my website also called the Kalama Sutta, where the Buddha instructs a very confused entire town because of all the different spiritual teachers that, that passed through there. And they wanted to know from the Buddha, how do we know? How can we choose the right one? Everyone says it is that their path is the right true path. And the Buddha simply described his teaching, and then he said, if you want to know if this works, you have to develop it yourself. You have to have the experience of it. And again, one of the lines that he uses, don't go by others' accounts or later develop scriptures. Take to the Dhamma, develop it, and see for yourself. In other words, show from your own experience whether it likely will lead to awakening or not. And most any Buddhist or even New Age spiritual practice will show that pretty quickly, especially if it's presented in a way that says that this practice is so difficult and arduous and hard to understand that it will take eons and eons, and sometimes they'll even say limitless eons to develop. And of course, the Buddha never taught anything like that. He taught a path that develops lasting peace and happiness in this lifetime. If we're willing to take to the path directly, and from my own experience, that also means to separate this path from any other spiritual path that we may be on, because it gets too... the other paths, when there's an attempt to reconcile what the Buddha taught with everything else or combine it with another practice, the key elements of what the Buddha taught are almost always lost. So the Buddha taught a very simple and direct path that anyone can integrate into their lives. That's exactly how he taught it. Remember that the Buddha, prior to his awakening and prior to beginning his teaching career, studied every major spiritual discipline of his time. He understood them so clearly that the teachers that presented them begged the Buddha to join them and be be their teacher. And the Buddha said that in every case that these teachings or even meditation techniques do not lead to his goal, which was understanding the nature of stress or unhappiness in our life, and to find a way, if it was possible, to eliminate individual contributions to suffering. And that's exactly what he did. And then he taught a very well-focused, singular Dhamma that anyone can engage with. So the path to lasting peace and happiness that I found is the path that Buddha taught over 2,600 years ago, and it's still available here today. So thank you for listening. I just a few announcements that I don't often make, but we have our spring retreat is coming up, May 11th to 14th, and that's information is on my website about that. We will go through the Buddha's first three discourses, and there will be additional understanding developed about another important key topic of emptiness, and a full understanding of probably the most important Buddhist teaching is the teaching on dependent origination will be included. So I hope you can join me again next week, and maybe you can join us on our retreat this year. Thank you. Peace.
Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction, and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.